This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
It's time for Shake Them Ropes once again, Morning Zoo Edition.
I hate you so much right now.
No, you love me more than ever right now. It's Shake Them Ropes. My name is Chris Novembrino. I'm joined, as always, by the man, the myth, the hawk.
Chris, I got to start off with some...
Yeah.
I have to start off with some bad news for Shake the...
Oh, okay. Hit me with some bad news.
Well, one, Sabatino Pescatelli, a.k.a. Tino Sabatini, or Sabatelli. God, I messed up the name already. It's on eight... Gonna stop this show right now. Appeared on Dark. I was hoping to have some audio from one Rob McCarron, noted Tino Sabatelli fan. Person who said he'd be headlining WrestleMania this past year, a couple years ago.
It could still happen. It could still happen.
WrestleMania already happened.
All right.
But
all right. Technicality.
But work happened, and he didn't have time to record. So I'm a little sad about that. So I was telling you before we started recording, I have watched more wrestling this week than in a long, long time. Because I watched Extreme Rules, I watched all the Wednesday, Friday, Monday stuff, and I also watched TNA Slammiversary, which isn't a bad show. And, look, all these, and Seth Rollins came out with a tweet today, he was like, wrestling's never been better, we're in a golden age. I'm like,
okay,
I'm like, in
all right,
ring.
Buddy.
Not untrue how great all these athletes are. Storytelling stinks right now, Chris. It stinks across
and
the
stories
board.
Are what get people to buy in to the wrestling they're watching. You can have these really good matches, and I'm with you. Like, I mean, right down to this four-way on SmackDown tonight, which was, like, you know, a nothing number one contender match for AJ Styles title.
But a great match.
And
a great match.
That was a good match. That was a really good match. Especially for where it needed to occupy in the slot, the level of work they needed to turn in, great match. But when you've got characters like Shorty G and the Lucha House Party, it's hard to get really invested in what you're watching. It's not The Rock. It's not Mankind in the dress shirt with the tie and Stone Cold Steve Austin and Kane in your main event. It's, you know, characters that feel very vaguely defined, if at all, having very, very good matches.
Yeah, and especially after a promo where Big E's about to go on a singles run and you're talking about the prestige of the Intercontinental title. Why is Big E not in this match? I that seems like quality control right there.
Yeah, and it's certainly, I mean, when you have Grand Metalik going for the Intercontinental title, I don't think hope springs eternal for him getting the belt in the first place. But when you foreshadow the next match with this clear implication that eventually Big E is going to go for the Intercontinental title, boy, who believes that the winner of this next four-way match between four guys who don't get the best treatment on WWE television, how invested are we in this guy actually defeating AJ Styles?
Right. Yeah, and you know, as much as I love Grand Metalik, you had a little storytelling going on with Drew Gulak, and God bless him, Shorty G should be a star right now as a killer. And it's just one of those...
Chad Gable is such a good wrestler, and he's just having to deal with this piece of crap Shorty G gimmick.
Well, it fits in because, for a couple reasons, Vince McMahon coming out and saying, look, we need to create more new stars. You're like, you have a mid-card full of nothing. You have Aleister Black fighting the same guys week after week after week. How are you going to heat him up? You know, those types of things. And I sat down and I was thinking about this week, and I'm I'm positing two things that are issues right now keeping us from moving on. One of it's a generational thing because, look, we haven't had a major change in how we watch wrestling. We've been watching wrestling Monday Night Live for 2 to 3 hours for since 1992, 93, something like that.
Yeah, and people just accept that this is necessarily the way it's always been, that this was the way it was when wrestling was hot, and that this is the way it necessarily has to be. And if you go back to the 1980s, wrestling was largely pre-taped, and a lot of it ran on Saturday night. And the way they actually made money and got business was having live shows. And, you know, Raw was a new experiment. So was Nitro, and people liked that, but it's not the only way wrestling can be successful.
Okay, that's a good segue, because what happened in the Monday Night Wars, and it's something that a lot of people, I think, have kind of caught on to as we look back on history and as we've moved on, but a lot don't realize this. There was no real use for pay-per-view other than a cash grab for fans to watch matches because they wanted to see the match. But the stories that they were telling, it was all the drive viewers to Monday night. And that's a problem we have right now. There's no reason to have Extreme Rules on a Sunday. They could have done a 3-hour Raw with Extreme Rules and done it, although it wouldn't have been on the network. It would have been Monday Night Raw, Extreme Rules, and we would have had this big card right now. And so there's never that psychic break between programs. What we're doing is we're getting, you know, okay, it's this person's turn, then it's this person's turn, and then it's this person's turn. And that happened naturally in wrestling before this, but in the pre-taped era that you described, you'd tape 4 weeks of wrestling, 5 weeks of wrestling. That fifth week would kind of be a buffer, peace-moving thing. You'd give the spoilers to what happened in the match. Maybe a clip here and there. Be sure to buy the video or the replay or whatever you're buying of it before we move into the next program and we bring in the new champs who won and they give interviews and things of that nature. The second part of this equation plays into Extreme Rules, and it frustrates me a bit because I asked this question on Twitter, and I think it's a much more pressing question than people realize. During the Swamp Fight, which they replayed parts of on SmackDown tonight, we are taping on Friday night, Alexa Bliss in an apparition shows up to woo Braun Strowman. Here's my question, Chris. Does Alexa Bliss on SmackDown know that she appeared in the dream during the Swamp Fight?
I think the answer to that question is no, she doesn't, but they're going to start writing more interactions between Braun and Alexa. And so I think initially they were doing more of a straight Alexa Nikki split angle, and now I don't think they're going to have a one turns on the other sort of angle in their match or in their relationship. I think Alexa's just going to be spun off with Braun Strowman.
Well, here's my bigger point, because AEW kind of suffers from this as well, especially.
But it's a weird no. To your, real quickly though, to finish off my thought here.
Oh, sorry.
I think it's a really weird thing to do. Mm-hmm. If you don't know whether or not Alexa knows that she appeared in Braun Strowman's apparition,
like, would she be watching backstage and see herself on the screen in the middle of this dream? That's the thing that's kind of hanging out.
Well, here's
there.
What we do know: if she was able to do that, she'd have to stand to the side of the screen at a weird angle.
But AEW has this issue with being the elite. And WWE has this issue as well, where they want it both ways. And I think presentation of wrestling is suffering from this. You exist in the WWE world, where you have certain rules and things that apply to you, but they also want to exist in the quote-unquote real world. And they don't know how to... they want to play footsie on both, but the problem is they can't do great storytelling if they're self-aware that they're within a TV show.
Yeah, and there's another thing with the WWE movie matches that they've been putting out. They've felt like versions of what Lucha Underground would do, but unlike Lucha Underground, WWE just simply does not nail dark or gritty. And one thing that Lucha Underground's production team was very adept at was making stuff that was pre-taped and cinematic style feel dark and gritty. And things like, you know, yes, the Jeff Hardy Sheamus bar fight was cheesy as hell, and we'll get into it in a deeper level in a moment. But like the fact that it was blue, white, fluorescent lit with no trace of grit, and it didn't feel remotely like a bar in ambiance and didn't have any of that like dark grit and grime quality, that's stuff that takes away from it. Even the swamp felt weird and produced.
Well, they fear heat. And Eric Bischoff said something on his 83 Weeks podcast this week that stuck with me a bit, and it's one of those little points that we've said before, but we often forget. The audience for WWE, forget demo talk, all that other thing, the audience for Vince McMahon that he's aiming his product towards are people who represent advertisers. And so you're not going to get dark or spooky or too violent or too bloody or too rough and tumble because he wants to woo those advertisers to buy time on his shows. And if you,
and he thinks that having a squeaky clean in terms of lighting and cleanliness part of the presentation,
it's not low rent. Yeah,
right, right. Yeah, he worries that it comes off as low rent, de class A, whatever you want to use. But like the other way of framing it, in the way that Lucha Underground, a more modern promotion that was started in the last decade here, thought about it, is it's stylization. You're putting a style onto your presentation. NWA did a similar thing. They aired, you know, towards like the clean sport feel. The reboot of World of Sport kind of did this too. Like, there's a stylization. It doesn't have to come off as low budget if you're leaning into what you're doing.
Let's do a few news and notes before we go into TV.
Oh, wait, then before we get into okay. that, I got to do the news theme song. News. Now check it out. Check it out. Here we go. So now we do this. Oh, shoot. No, we gotta go. News. Hold on. I'm gonna get it, Jeff. You just gotta be patient.
This is the worst Shake Them Ropes theater ever.
News. I'll do a different chord next time. This one was kind of a downer one. But you have downbeat news, right?
I wouldn't call it downbeat. It's just a few personnel things.
I just wanted you to lean into this song, okay. But that's fine. No, it's fine. No, it's too late. The moment has passed.
The 12 of us who still occasionally watch 205 Live turned on 205 Live last week to find that the commentary team is one Vic Joseph and Drew Gulak together. I can only assume that this is because of the NBA season doing what it does, so the job with the Cleveland Cavaliers, not quite ready to fill into that, so he needs to make some money. I haven't heard if this is a long-term thing or a permanent thing or if it's just...
I mean, the whole future of 205 Live at this point seems to be week to week, right? Like, I think abandon any pretense of telling this story.
I'm trying to figure... It's like that business that you know is going under, but you still love it, and you want it to go well. It's like, but you're sitting there thinking, how can I bring people in... To show, you know, it's like having, I can't say operating an arcade, because an arcade would probably do well with the retro crowd these days, but you know what I'm saying. It's like having an outdated store and watching it die in front of you. It's kind of sad in some ways.
Yeah, for sure. And I know people wrote the epitaph for 205 Live several years ago, but to me it didn't really die as a show until they moved it to half an hour and really sort of cut it off. And at that point, now they are telling week-to-week stories with absolutely no stakes. Whereas before, you know, they had several different runs here. I mean, even, you know, we don't love the guy or anything like that, but, like, Enzo Amore had this very sort of, like, notable presence on 205 Live when they moved him down there more successfully and much better. Drew Gulak had a great run. I mean, even Tony Nese, who I was not a huge fan of, if you recall, he had an entire storyline built around him that they kind of, that's where you started to see the cracks in 205 Live, right? Like, it was like, they were kind of telling a story with Tony Nese, then Enzo sort of flamed out, and so they had to kind of memory hole a whole bunch of the Enzo storylines that they were telling, but then they sort of dropped the ball between Drew Gulak and Tony Nese, and it's just, it's sad.
And then you had,
because
you also had a writing team that was there that really cared about it and wanted to do something with it, but they weren't allowed to use NXT guys, and they'd occasionally get the ones, and then by the time they really got their feet under them, they decided to shake up the writing teams and send them all over the place. It's a bit of a mess, Chris.
It's unfortunate because I think there could have been a really nice niche product, and going back to what you were talking about earlier in the show, about changing ways we digest media writ large, but that also applies to wrestling, you know, like instead of live television, which was a very 1990s sort of thing, gotta see it live, now it's gotta see it on demand, and I want to see my show, and people have like weird little niche shows, and like this can be really awesome for content producers and also really awesome for content consumers, because There can be a weird dude on YouTube who, you know, does like a cooking show or whatever, and they're just really friggin' weird, but they really connect with your energy, and it's great. But that guy would never get his own television show on a major news network, or not major news network, like on a major cooking network in this case. But like they have their own little niche, right? Like that's cool. But what WWE does when it's producing its product now is 205 Live is really kind of indistinct from even what was the flagship alternative brand, NXT, which is increasingly becoming indistinct from Raw and SmackDown. NXT really feels like Raw and SmackDown with gold ropes now. And the other two shows are sort of indistinct from each other. And like what's ended up happening is this homogenized product that WWE still places some emphasis on seeing live, even during the pre-taped era.
So I said TNA Slammiversary happened this past week. Our 90-day non-compete is over for a lot of furloughed workers. So Heath Slater, the Good Brothers, Gallows and Anderson, EC3, and Eric Young all appearing on there. Boy, Eric Young looked good. I'm so happy for him because he is such a good wrestler, such a good performer, and he's back in the company that did something with him. So I'm very happy for that.
Yeah, no, I like Eric Young was always best in TNA. He might be interesting to see go and, you know, do a run over in AEW.
I think he's going to be in TNA for a while. I mean, he's in good company. He has people who love him. It's fine with me.
Yeah, no, and if he's got like an office job component with it too, then, you know, that's where he'll be. But yeah, I mean, Slammiversary is always kind of a sneaky good show. It's like, even if TNA isn't doing anything particularly interesting for the rest of the year, they usually get it all together to do a pretty good little Slammiversary show.
MVP looking to get a multi-year deal from the WWE, possibly. Or at least they've offered him one. That fascinates me.
I think he's a great manager. So, like, I mean, here's the deal with MVP. What they probably don't want to have happen with MVP. He's good. He's still okay in the ring. But he's really good on the microphone. And if he went over to AEW and got to play off of Taz, I mean, those could be some money promos. MVP managing a guy, Taz on the other side of the ring managing a guy. Like, they're cutting promos on each other. Really helping develop out guys who maybe need a mouthpiece. Like, you could have this long, steady feud between MVP and Taz that's a proxy for all these other guys. I think they realize that they need to keep MVP under lock and key here, because when you've got someone who's good on the stick, it's a valuable asset.
As we will talk about when we get to AEW, There are rumors swirling that there will be a new Nation of Domination stable. Chris, as you know, socio-political angles involving African Americans, that is WWE's sweet spot right there.
This is a company, as we have been saying throughout the show, that has a hard time getting their head out of the 1990s.
I mean, they handled that Naomi deserves better hashtag real well tonight, didn't they, Chris?
okay, so, like, let's break this down. Naomi Deserves Better was put out there by WWE last week as just a standard hashtag as a reaction to Lacey Evans. And I don't think that they were trying to throw chum in the water.
I don't think they put it out there.
No, I don't.
Well, you had said that, so I'm trying to correct
you. I thought they did put it out.
No. This was fan-driven, I believe.
It's fan-driven? Like, they didn't even start it?
Yeah.
I should have could have sworn they started it. Like, they at least had a hashtag up in reference to it. Like, at bare minimum, they were amplifying / signal boosting it.
Nevertheless, people took it seriously.
And so, like, you get this big uproar that is, let's be honest, just simply look at the women's division right now. Right now, you've got Bayley, you've got Sasha, you have Asuka, Kairi Sane's on her way out, but you've got a lot of very talented people. And Naomi is of a class of wrestlers in that division who is very talented, athletically speaking. But when it comes to the ins and outs and the beats of having a long-form match that tells, like, a big, coherent story, Naomi has not had maybe the opportunity to do that, but I would also argue that WWE doesn't do a great job coaching people up on being those kind of long-form match callers. And as such, Naomi is very dependent on having someone who can help make her spots look good, not unlike the person she's paired up with right now, Lacey Evans. Lacey Evans can do a lot of very cool and impressive athletic moves, but we've also seen Lacey Evans eat a lot of ass when she busts out on some of those moves and, like, the timing isn't there or whatever. She's very, very timing dependent. Alexa Bliss, to a certain extent, is like this. Whereas people like Bayley and Sasha Banks and Asuka, in terms of wrestlers, in terms of wrestling acumen, they're just simply a cut above.
I'm going to take a different tact on this. Here is why I think people are going to be rightfully angry at this company right now. You had people take this Naomi Deserves Better hashtag very seriously. So WWE uses it for marketing, and they say, okay, we're going to address it tonight on TV. And so they address it with the following. They bring her out. She does some jokey shtick about star ratings as they pertain to Seth Rollins puking. And then a hokey thing with Lacey Evans coming down. Oh, sugar. You know, you have the whole Southern thing that, look, it's playing into it a bit. And so the people who wanted this addressed seriously are watching this played for laughs and now are just feeling like idiots for watching.
Oh, and she said a few things, too, that sort of made the whole hashtag feel trivial. And, like she was pulling the sting out of it, too, in her dialogue as well. And you also had Miz and Morrison taking it out on the whole hashtag. And what I will say,
but the company thinks this makes her look good. That's the other thing. I'm just like,
right. So what I will say is that the people who were upset on behalf of Naomi, perhaps not necessarily with firm grounding in reality last week, I would argue very much have reason to be mad at the company now, because let's put it this way. If they were on terra firma last week, it wouldn't have made any difference. The company would have reacted to it in this exact same mocking way. And, like, this company does have this long-term problem with booking African-American talent that has been a real issue. Going all the way back, or in recent memory, going all the way back to the Kofi Kingston run, where they didn't really invest in telling a story with him. Part of that's just this company's not very good at telling stories right now, but part of that's also that larger narrative.
Speaking of Kairi Sane, WWE apparently willing to throw money at her to not compete when she goes back to Japan. Don't know how that's going to work out. I think it just depends on what Kairi wants to do. Does she want to live a married life, or does she want to go to stardom or something like that? I'm going to be very fascinated by this.
Yeah, I mean, she might want to go to stardom. Wasn't she having hip issues or something like that when she was coming into the company? Yeah, no, I want to say that she had some injuries that were nagging her on her way in. And I remember some of the scuttlebutt at the time was something like, this is kind of her last hurrah here because her body is starting to fail her a little bit.
Going into this week's television, WWE Raw this week did 1.628 million viewers, up from last week's 1.561 million, drew 4.46 rating in the 18 to 49 demo, down from last week's 0.48. I believe it's the second lowest. AEW, 845,000 viewers, NXT, 615,000. AEW blew them away in the demo. Just, it was like, AEW was like third or fourth, and NXT's way down at like 49th or something. Real sports are back. These numbers aren't going to improve. Chris, you have an interesting statement concerning a mythos.
Yeah, so there is, without naming names here, there is a mythos that I've started to see form among some in the wrestling commentariat that AEW was on the verge of really breaking through to the mainstream if you go back to March. And if only you'd look at the numbers. And what Jeff and I did for an extended period of time before this show began is we looked at the numbers, and the numbers are remarkably static, because the narrative is, but for COVID-19, AEW would be going gangbusters right now. And Vince is sandbagging AEW by having NXT out there, which is not that particularly hot of a product right now. And but for NXT and COVID-19, AEW would probably be doing something, you know, like 1.5 million, maybe 2 million views, you know, depending on how bullish you are on AEW. But the unfortunate problem for AEW is that the numbers, if you look at them over time, simply don't back it up. It was already settling in at under 1 million viewers here. And while AEW has been, on some weeks, very good. I mean, you know, listen to some of the reviews we've done over the last few months here. Would there have been, I went from being kind of uninterested in the product to getting into it, and like, I enjoy the show. I think they have some pretty good shows. Jericho does what Jericho's going to do. But it wasn't COVID-19 that killed this product from getting launched. It's that this product kind of has found a bit of its ceiling right now, in part because it's doing WWE light or alt WWE style of booking. Orange Cassidy with his orange juice brewed gimmick that he's doing. Chris Jericho hamming it up. You've got a lot of very WWE-like things. And so this mythos of they were just poised to take off in March, you go and look at the ratings, people. They weren't. And if anything, COVID-19, and the coronavirus, and a lack of content. One governor talked about how we needed content right now at the start of the coronavirus, or like back in April or May. There was a lack of content. AEW was creating content, and they weren't able to build momentum. We talked about this being an opportunity for wrestling because they were one of the few sport-like products on the air right now. Now, real sports is back. So they're taking what should have been an opportunity to launch, and this mythos is spinning that opportunity to grow and trying to act like it was weights holding down these companies. It wasn't.
Right. They're settled in about 750,000 to 850,000, give or take, every week. That's your AEW audience. And people just didn't want to watch wrestling, I think, especially, I mean, across the board, all the numbers are down. People didn't want to watch this hokey stuff, or at least wrestling as it's presented. Let's start.
People don't want to be a part of wrestling culture,
yeah,
like they did in the 1990s. The wear a t-shirt, throw out the catchphrases, be the road dog or whatever. Like, none of that stuff. People don't want to participate in that culture.
Yeah, it's embarrassing to be associated with it. And until we...
Right, yeah, you always tweet me your, I gotta change the channel, or what's your term for it? I'm afraid, I'm ashamed.
Somebody walks in the room.
Yeah, somebody walks in the room. Yeah,
this is the moment where you're afraid somebody walks into the room. And there's that aspect to it. And until they get rid of that aspect, look, there's been cheese in pro wrestling for years. But you got to balance the cheese with just, to me, straight aheadness. Don't be cute. Don't do, you know, it's good matches aren't going to get there. I hate to tell you that, but speaking of good matches, Extreme Rules, Ice Cold Thoughts, because my hot takes were on Fightful. You can download there if you want to listen to those. Great wrestling, just ridiculous storytelling. I mean, the women's matches across the board to me were great. Sasha Asuka was great. Bayley Nikki was great. But all these matches had a bit of overbooking to them. Example, you can't do a U.S. title thing where MVP's taking the title and he's uncrowned, and then later in the show, do the same thing with Sasha Banks. In the Sasha versus Asuka match, there are other finishes to get to where you wanted to. You know, you blow the mist in the ref's face, and either Bayley lifts the hand up three times to count for him, or the ref blindly counts, or the ref DQs Asuka. You can't do the Bayley puts on the shirt and all of a sudden is a referee unless you say she had a referee license or something. You have to do that backward storytelling to me. It was this kind of thing all night where the guys were killing themselves. McIntyre and Ziggler was absolutely great. Storytelling was a little weak at times, Chris.
Yeah, okay. So go back to Sasha and Bayley. Bayley throwing on the referee's jersey, we have never seen, like, or we don't usually see. If we have seen, it's so rare that I can't think of it on the top of the memory. We don't see managers slide into the ring, take off the shirt from a referee, and then count the three count, and the promotion then treat that as completely legitimate. Now, like, I get that there's not manager-type figures on WWE television right now, and that's a good thing in some ways, but, like, you could still have an off-screen sense of a management to this organization wherein you can't just steal titles. When you let Sasha just carry it around, it's not the same thing as MVP making his own belt. So, for example, Apollo still has his U.S. title. MVP, who is also doing a similar gimmick to Sasha, as you pointed out, made his own belt, so at least you get there in a much more sort of coherent way, and then you can get rid of the artificial U.S. title or replace the old U.S. title with the new U.S. title, whatever you want to do down the line here, which is where I think this is going. With Sasha stealing the belt, there's all these questions, like, why didn't she get the belt back later? Like, why didn't, you know, Stephanie call up Sasha and say, you've got to relinquish the belt? I mean, there's just a number of open questions here. You didn't need to do this.
And the whole reason for that is because
it felt like they were trying to zig instead of zag. Well, instead of just having Sasha win, they wanted to create some, like, in-between.
Well, the original plan was for Asuka to win, but they decided they wanted to do a rematch for television, which brings up my conversation of why are we doing these pay-per-views then? Because
that really is asinine then. And no, that's another big problem with this. To go back to
let me put one more button on there.
Okay.
Stephanie, that whole thing kills. If you saw the interaction on Twitter, it killed the Aunt Pam is the best character because she's like, Stephanie McMahon's done for. And then Stephanie tweeted back, excuse me. And then Bayley just kind of cowers. Oh, nothing, ma'am. It's like, you're the best. You shouldn't be worried about this. What are you? Oh, you're lucky nobody pays attention to Twitter.
I don't know. I think that that's actually consistent with her character.
Weaselly?
I was going to say is that I think you can kind of trace back the moment where, like, the pay-per-view stopped mattering in the Monday Night Wars when Vince decided that he wanted to outdo Nitro by doing a big title drop on Monday Night Raw. Like, actually dropping the WWF championship on Monday Night.
The Mick Foley move?
Like, yeah, the Mick Foley move. Doing that, I think, you know. Then all of a sudden, it was this all importance on Raw. Instead of the pay-per-view that just occurred a few days prior that people spent money on.
But I didn't have any complaints about the actual wrestling on this Extreme Rules. The tag team match ended brutally.
No. If anything, I owe Ziggler and McIntyre an apology because even though this was stupidly booked with all these, like, stipulations and the surprise stipulation, the follow-up was also stupid, the actual in-ring work in that match was really good. The eye-for-an-eye match was long. The finish was dumb.
But the wrestling was good.
Yeah, you know, for sure. It wasn't the Swamp Firefly Funhouse match. Like, they're unwatchable, man. They're like crap movies. They're like B movie scenes. They're like extracted scenes from a B movie that I find on like a pirate video movie website that I go, oh no, that's too crappy even for me just to have on the television.
What did you like better, the swamp match or the bar fight?
I feel like the bar fight was shorter.
Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, it at least, okay, it made sense up until, and I knew this was coming, a Jeff Hardy one-third of a character appeared.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Jeff Hardy. He can't reinvent himself, but he can keep coming up with these one-third of a characters.
Nothing says bar fight like a swanton bomb.
Yeah, and an inexplicable transformation underneath the hat.
I was like, okay, you knew it was going to happen.
He should have at least turned into friggin' Willow.
I did appreciate the continuity of the bartender.
Yeah, no, I appreciated that. Like, at least someone paid some semblance of attention, mm-hmm. but, like, the structure of the bar fight was silly.
Yeah,
there's no drama to these matches. It's just like...
There's no anger to the matches? There's nothing like
that. Yeah,
there's
nothing.
This doesn't feel like
a
fight. This feels like they're doing a match, and it's like, okay, great. Like, I want to see anger out of one of these guys that, you know, when you're in a fight and you're getting beat, you get angry sometimes. There's no anger whatsoever in this WWE product.
And I got to tell you, like, if you're going to do a bar fight, something like that, get your makeup team and stuff and just, like, do up some blood or whatever, like, gimmicked up blood. Like, you know, you don't have to have them, like, get busted up, but, like, in movies and stuff, when there's bar fights, people look like they've been through a bar fight.
I'm going to crown Cesaro possibly the greatest WWE tag team wrestler ever.
Oh, yeah. No, he's awesome.
I mean, this team with Nakamura is great. The bar was pretty great. And the Tyson Kidd thing was great. I mean...
And, oh, by the way, he was good with Jack Swagger.
Oh, yeah, I forgot
Cesaro
about that
was
one.
Amazing
yeah.
at is he's amazing at elevating... people who were kind of floundering on their own. I mean, whether it was Swagger, Tyson Kidd, or Nakamura, all three of these people were sort of dead in the water. And so they get paired up with Cesaro. They find inspiration in the ring, start having better matches, and then also find a little bit of their personality, too.
That Asuka Sasha match was so great up until the end. I'm still.
I know. It's really annoying that they went that route because that, like, I mean, this is the thing with Extreme Rules. If you just don't care about the story, if you kind of approach it like TNA Slammiversary and you're like, I'm never going to watch another episode of this probably for the rest of the year and I'm just watching this as a one off, you'll probably find a lot of things that you really like on Extreme Rules. The problem for people like Jeff and I and the average viewer is when you're watching this as part of like a narrative through line, man, there's just like nothing that like sticks with you because they're immediately, I mean, they're up in the ante on the main event here, or not the main event, the Ziggler-McIntyre match, you know, like now they're doing it again, so.
And they're doing Sasha Asuka again. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, I will excuse the Nikki Cross, Bailey brass knuckles or thing she wears on her hand that says boss finish or however the verbiage was. Cole, poor Cole, just blanks there on ring. And the name of it's ring. Or maybe he was told that he couldn't call it that. But I'll accept that screw job finish, but you gotta give me a clean finish later in the other women's match when it's going so well.
And I'm sorry, but if Rey Mysterio is going to have eye injuries, they need to last more than one
and
night.
And also can't be in the middle of the show. You can't put, hey, we took a guy's eye out.
He's going to be fine.
Here's Asuka to cut a promo and say some gibberish and stuff.
Yeah, so to your point, it should have been the end of the show. If they're going to be mortified and play it up, I mean, think about it.
My God, I was taken out. Now it's time for Dancing with the New Day.
And then they go backstage later on in the show and tell you, don't worry, the most horrific thing that we've ever seen in WWE, that's the way we were framing it just an hour ago, is actually completely reversible. So
our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Hey!
Sounds like they're gonna save the eye.
Yeah, no, he'll be fine, folks.
Now let's bring out Bailey.
It's called stakes, people. It's called stakes. Like, Rollins was vomiting. You can't then buck around and be like, remember when Rollins vomited? The guy was fine
later
on. But was
it 4-star vomiting or 5-star vomiting?
He's gonna puke.
Somebody intercut that audio. I saw that. That was fantastic. Well, so for this week's television, where would you like to start? Would you like to just go over the main roster?
Yeah, let's do the Raws. Let's do the Raws. Talk about the Raws.
Look, this.
You know, Vince says that he needs to make stars, but when you've got people like Chad Gable and Aleister Black, and you don't know what to do with them, I think it's a you problem, not a them problem.
Yeah, I don't mind. Don't mind Shelton Benjamin being in this MVP stable. I kind of dig it, to be honest.
Oh, no.
With you.
I like it. No, I like it. Yeah, no, I mean, these are the type. Lashley and Benjamin are two guys who are great in the ring, who are not necessarily amazing on the microphone. Although Shelton Benjamin has like a weird energy that I really enjoy. Like when he's just allowed to be like weird, he's fun. But like Lashley is like nothing to write home about in terms of promos. And MVP can serve as the focal point, rhetorically speaking, for these divisions, and I like that a lot.
Ruby Riott got her first singles win in forever. Cool with that.
That was weird. She got really weirdly emotional about it when she defeated Peyton Royce in 3 minutes and change.
Yeah. Well, you know, at least somebody's feeling something, Chris. I'll take that. I'll take it.
You know, it was actually not a bad match for the WWE standard 3-minute match, because like Riott and Peyton Royce are both really good.
Well, it's just weird because you have Bianca involved in this whole story, and she's...
Oh, that's true, too.
I mean, she's the class out of all of them, and I'm just wondering, okay, who eventually has to lose to her other than the Iconics? I was like, oh, damn. Oh, the
you got the Street Profits defeating Andrade and Angel Garza for the umpteenth time.
Yeah, you know, it'd be great if there were stakes. It'd be great. That frog splash was so fantastic.
I can't keep seeing this match.
God.
I know. Dude, like, here's the thing. They're all good and everything, but, like, I've seen this match so many times. It's just, like, I just expect Andrade and Angel Garza to have a match against, like, the Viking Raiders, the Street Profits every single week.
This week we're bickering, but it's Zelina who's the problem. Okay.
What? They don't know where they're going with that story, and so it's really boring from week to week, because it's just like, well, who's going to be the drama here?
Yeah.
Instead of actually, like, having a coherent building narrative thing, and what they're just gonna, you know, explode. But this is not the Mega Powers, like, you know, it's not gonna be the Mega Powers exploding. And oh, by the way, when the Mega Powers exploded, it was over a discrete event.
And there's just some weird thought, like, they're trying to put over things like, okay, Kairi Sane beats Bailey. Well, this really puts a damper on Sasha Banks's match against Asuka. And I go, how? Neither of them are involved. What does Kairi beating Bailey have to do with Sasha's chances against Asuka? None. Zero. Nada. Zilch.
So the no stakes, no story matches really make these things unpleasant. I'd rather they have longer talking segments. Yeah. Like, I don't want the old days where Triple H comes out and does 35 minutes of promo like he used to do back in the day, like in the last decade here. But I would like some of these other wrestlers coming out and getting, I don't know, 5 to 7 minutes to actually get themselves over a little bit. Like, part of the reason you don't have stars, hint, hint, is because people aren't coming out and actually connecting with themselves, not just with the audience, but, like, with the plot, actually connecting themselves to a plot point in the show here. Stuff just happens.
Orton and Big Show was pretty darn good, I thought, for what it was.
Well, yeah, yeah, okay, so, like, there is a match that Paul White can still have that I think can be really interesting, like, where Paul White is just slow, methodical, and pummeling people in the corner. Like, Big Show's cornering of people and Randy's selling of it in this particular match, like, he was selling really well. Randy was doing really good work here in this match. And I think, you know, Paul White, when he's got you in the corner, man, I mean, even if he just runs in the corner, hits you with the spear, like, you believe that that hurts like hell, you know? You believe that those punches to the gut hurt like hell. And I think when he's selling, like, stuff doesn't faze him because he is a giant, I mean, it's pretty good. And I liked the finish, man. I liked Orton really making sure to get that second one and just making it murder before he hit that second
one. We have complained about a lot of segments on WWE this week. I am going to put one over hard. We've gone over most of SmackDown. But, man, the red herring swerve of Bayley going, if you want to have a rematch, to Nikki Cross, and her just staring down Sasha and saying, you need to fight Alexa Bliss. And then Nikki buying in, shoving Alexa, and Bayley and Sasha looking at one another like, I can't believe that actually worked. That was such a fantastic segment. It was great obnoxious heel work on the part of Bayley and Sasha. It's signaling, it was a nice swerve for, that's the kind of good swerve for the audience, I think. And I'm gonna enjoy this Nikki Alexa breakup story quite a bit, I think.
Yeah, I think it has the makings of being interesting. As I said, though, earlier in the show, I think that maybe they've decided that they want to do Alexa and Braun Strowman as some sort of narrative thing here. They wouldn't have seated Alexa as appearing to Braun in his apparitions or whatever if they didn't plan on getting to that sometime sooner rather than later. So I don't know how much of a breakup story you're going to be getting between Nikki and
I was just thinking that they were going to try and find a filler program to get to crowds so that they could do Sasha and Bayley in front of a crowd, and this is the way there.
When are crowds?
I don't know.
I mean, like, yeah, to get to crowds. I know they tell themselves that, like, but, like, when are crowds?
Yeah, I liked this match. I liked Bayley and Sasha being obnoxious on commentary, with the exception that Bayley.
Oh my god!
Bayley needs.
It was distracting, but it was funny as hell.
Oh, it was distracting, but they did a great job. With the exception that Bayley needs a quicker comeback to Corey on the kendo stick line, because everybody knows that line's coming. Everybody knows somebody's gonna bring up the way that Bayley got beat against Alexa Bliss. You know, that stupid way where Bailey's just kind of staring at a kendo stick and I can't use it. Then Alexa just whacks her on the head. 1, 2, 3. And you just see kind of the, oh, did you just bring that up when they're doing that? The cuts were distracting to me. But the obnoxiousness, the nonsense was strong overall.
You can fill space with Sasha and Bayley. And I do think, send them out there with bullet points, give them 5 to 7 minutes, and just let them be weird. Let them torment Michael Cole. Like, open the impulse to let them have a lot of the show is the right impulse.
Sasha bringing out the Vince impression. I howled at that. I howled at Bayley challenging Michael Cole to a match.
Oh, that was great. That was great. You're not doing anything at SummerSlam.
Well, I'm retired. 1-0. Well, I like it too. I find it funny. I don't know why. Cole, when he breaks the veneer It's funny to me, but anything else on SmackDown that tickled your fancy before we move on?
Job guy Tony Nese doing jobs. We get Miz TV with Naomi. We already went over that. We already talked about the four-way match, and then we talked about the bar fight. Yeah, so now I think that covers everything that was on SmackDown.
AEW. Eddie Kingston. Best damn thing in wrestling this week.
I'm glad that people are finally realizing what we realized when we were watching him on NWA television, which is that this guy is a friggin' star. Like, this guy has a star-level promo. He's not even necessarily that amazing in the ring, but this guy can talk.
And that's all I want. That's all I want.
And that matters. That matters. Like, to have someone like that to face off against a guy like Taz, to have someone like that facing off against a guy like MVP, talking really does a lot, especially in the mid-card, because mid-card guys and mid-card matches don't get the time. They don't get to do the crazy high spots and stuff that gets reserved for the main event. So what's going to get the mid-card going? What gets the mid-card over? Good talking. And Eddie Kingston has that all day, every
day. There was a moment where he kind of got a little bit self-involved with the "don't worry, this is my time" type of thing. And I thought
that was a little hammy. He was like,
but other than that,
shut up, Arn. Because, like, Arn's so loud these days, right?
You can't hear Arn without a microphone.
I'm Arn. You can't hear me. You can't hear my voice.
But he came out there. He established his space. He established what he wanted. He established who he was. And he established he was there to beat up Cody Rhodes. And God bless him. I just want a fight sometimes. That's all I want. And the build to that. And he's talking trash about Arn. Talking trash about Cody's privileged upbringing. He obviously has a chip on his shoulder. And that, to me, connects more with the wrestling product than coming out there and going, "Last week at Extreme Rules, I was involved in a swamp fight in which I faced Braun Strowman." Blah, you know, that
expositional. And it absolutely decimated me.
Yes. And we're now holding the title in abeyance. That came back this week. Can't believe it.
Yeah, these words that you just simply don't hear in real life. Eddie Kingston is such a revelation because, one, he gets to have a regional accent. So he gets to speak in, like, a hard New York City style of accent. That's, you know, where he's from. And he's speaking his language. He does get a little self-indulgent, like just yelling at Arn. I mean, it would have been fine if I believed for a second that Arn was any louder than, "Hey, you better not do that." Like, you know, like, this is Arn Anderson we're talking about here. He's just simply not
the
that
street
loud.
Fight aspect of it. Or no DQ.
I liked it. I loved it.
And I loved
old
Arn's
school, also decisive, so that we can move on from that match. We don't need to have a rematch or anything like that. Like that.
Arn's promo that was only on the internet was fantastic afterwards. I adored it.
I like Kingston's promo that was on the internet afterwards, too.
Yeah, where he was very upset with losing. I'll take an Eddie Kingston Taz promo battle.
Absolutely. I like them a lot. I think that there's some interesting stuff.
But here's
going
the generational problem again. We have these managers who can talk. Arn, Jake, Taz, Vicky Guerrero to some respect, Tully. But none of these wrestlers are cutting promos like that anymore. And it's scary to me, Chris. It really is. That nobody can get out there with a gift for gab other than maybe Eddie Kingston or the Briscoes and bring that kind of thunder on a promo.
Yeah, and it's telling that the people who have that real connect with an audience in the year 2020 thunder are people who've never had a serious run in WWE and learned how to wrestle around the world and around the country. I think there's something to that. Once you go through WWE, you get saddled with all of the weird, like, rhetorical, stylistic framing stuff. Like, as you know, we use decimate, but like obliterate. They love these weird words and weird cadences that sound very theatrical, but like almost like cartoon villain or cartoon babyface instead of just the way a normal person speaks.
Again, the matches on this show, pretty darn fantastic, I thought. Butcher and Blade versus the Young Bucks. Howled at how this match started back in the kitchen. I Just they're back there cutting meat. Time to start a match. Let's do this.
Yeah, no, and then Blade takes a table to the face. It's like, my God.
There were a couple things. I mean, he missed the dive on there to the outside where he was supposed to go through the table.
Yeah, no, and then he takes it right to the face. Yeah. That's what I was referring to.
You know, it's your modern day thing.
MJ,
I'm not a fan of both guys hitting a finisher through a table at the same time to finish the match. That seems a little too choreographed to me, but I understand the end, but it was a great match. I thought it helped both guys or both teams.
Interesting. I think all these teams have been doing the Andrade Cien Almas, Hector Garza or Angel Garza Street Profits circuit. And they've had so many matches now that all of them feel about equal. And it's like, everybody's got everybody's number. Okay, but then I'm not really interested in seeing anyone climb a mountain because you're all on a plateau. I think they've got a little bit of that problem in that division. Good talent. A lot of talented guys. Butcher and Blade, good team. They definitely are finding their stride, and they've developed out a little bit here. But in terms of the lay of the tag team scene and tag team mountain, it feels more like a nice rolling plain right now. A long, sprawling plain. Pleasant. But no mountain to climb. I liked MJF and Griff Garrison for what it was. I feel like they've got plans for Griff Garrison. And this, unlike the Jericho circuit of enhancement matches where he's quote-unquote... the Jericho circuit of elevation matches where he's quote-unquote elevating people... I actually think that for Griff Garrison, who went from being a nobody, him having this match with MJF, it mostly helped him up to the point where Griff goes, "You're undefeated," or whatever. Yeah. When he actually gives MJF the words, I think it really pulls the sting out of what you were trying to do to like get Griff over to that next level. That was a little bit of a wimp move to me, a twerp move.
Other things that stuck out. Oh, that shot that Ricky Starks gave Darby Allin.
Whew. Whew. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I like Ricky Starks paired with Taz.
I kind of dig that,
man,
yeah.
Let me tell you. Yeah, I'm into Ricky Starks and Taz together.
Yeah, I'm hoping that if Aaron Solo's around, that extra talented becomes managed by Taz. I don't want to necessarily make Starks a tag team wrestler per se, but I think he and Solo work well together. And again, as a noted Bayley fan, I want to help Bayley's friends. But yeah, no, I like Starks having a mouthpiece with a little bit more toughness, and it'll help play off of his. He kind of plays a bit of a dandy character, so I like that juxtaposition.
Yeah, like Starks is like really into himself or whatever, but we've seen him in the past on promos, and he gets a little lost.
Gets
sometimes.
A little lost.
So having Taz. And I really loved the different subtle notes that Taz was working into his promo this week. Really connecting the dots post-match, how he talked to Cage, how he almost got fired, that like the way he said cooler heads prevailed had like layers in it. He's really good at this.
Yeah. Looks like we're getting a Battle Bowl type of women's tag team tournament. See who they scrounge up for this. I would suggest Nicole Savoy. You get on the phone to her. But hey, we're going to have Anna Jay and Karu Shida and,
I know they did not need to do a Battle Bowl style tournament with this division.
No,
I'd
love a women's tag team thing. Just get some women's tag teams in there as opposed to the random thing where we'll probably do some stories in here. And it's mostly going to be focused around this Allie Brandy Rhodes story, I think, unfortunately.
I mean, if anything, right now, the better division to do the Battle Bowl style thing would be the men's division, because you have things like the Dark Order kind of floating in there, where you could have like this like weird Dark Order guy paired with babyface style matches and stuff. Like, there's just more interesting stories to tell than in the women's division, where basically everyone's kind of doing their own thing.
Oh,
right,
and also
now,
get Nicole Matthews a work visa, please, because this division needs a heel while we wait for more pictures of Britt Baker's nose. I'd like Britt Baker to take a couple weeks off. I understand why they're keeping her on, but she's not going to be ready for a while.
And her stuff isn't going anywhere right now. Yeah. It's always funny. The Michael Jordan stuff, like the first slide was funny. Like Rebels, I've watched Space Jam 19
she's
times,
great.
And it's the same.
I like
way.
Rebel a lot.
She's funny. She's very funny. Like some of these lines are a little. I think maybe a little too much Britt Baker, but I like her. I like her. Jericho Hager versus Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy. I'm sorry, but if Jericho beats Jungle Boy in a singles match, and then he beats Jungle Boy in a tag team match, did you really build up Jungle Boy?
Oh, Chris, I wanted your opinion on the on Diamante versus Ivelisse as a Lucha Underground watcher.
Ivelisse has been good in the past. There wasn't a lot going on in this
no,
match.
There wasn't.
It doesn't necessarily look like wrestlers. Over time passes for wrestlers, and skills diminish. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say anything too soon here, but I have concerns that perhaps this has occurred with
Ivelisse. I'm sorry I threw that at you, and I probably shouldn't have. We should have probably just said, yeah, that was a match, and moved on.
Oh, yeah, now she's going to kill me. Yeah, that's the issue. You're worried she's going to, you know, stalk me down and beat the shit out of me or something.
Hell, yeah.
But in all fairness, this has never really bothered me in the past. It's not going to start bothering me now. So there you go. Hey, Ivelisse, you've had some good matches in the past, and I've been in your corner when you've been good.
Throw money at Thunder Rosa as well. Just bring her in here.
Yeah, they're definitely going to have to bring her in. She's just going to be like a one-shot thing because she's starting her own women's promotion. Good on her, by the way, too. I'm really glad to see, because I was a huge fan of her back in Lucha Underground, and I always thought that they could do a lot more with her, and she's instead doing that weird snaky snake gimmick. And now she's, you know, really kind of establishing herself, and I love that she's starting her own division and her own promotion and everything.
I think that will do for AEW. There's going to be a loaded Dark next week with like 12 matches, I think, and then a big time card for that. This NXT show really got off the wrong foot because William Regal goes on Twitter and basically teases retirement. In terms of a big announcement, to me, that's what it seemed like to me they were doing.
Oh, yeah, and that was my comment to you in the DMs.
Yeah, I thought for sure they were going to put HBK retiring. On here.
Yeah, that's right. And my joke to you is like, you know, is he going to be 35?
But
otherwise, you're not moving the ratings.
But no, it's that Keith Lee is giving up the North American title because... We can't establish anybody dominant on this show. I'd love for him to...
Right. You can't have a dominant babyface.
Let him do both titles.
You try to make this like whole accomplishment thing. He doesn't even get to do a takeover where he has two matches, which would be the point, like to get Keith Lee over.
Yes.
And by the way, you could have this great story through that takeover where Keith Lee has to make decisions about, you know, is he going to go all out in the North American title defense, or maybe he needs to tap out a little bit earlier than he might have. It gives you so many easy outs to get it onto a heel champion for your next run here. And instead, they just hotshot him dropping the title, and it's in abeyance. It's like the negative heat transfer move. And whoever becomes the United States champion or the North American champion will have none of the reflective glory of having defeated Keith Lee because of the way this lineage is.
Yeah.
It's a problem with NXT.
The in abeyance joke goes back to, I believe, it's 2013, and that's what they did with Daniel
2013.
Bryan.
Yeah. And Hunter comes out
Can't
having looked up abeyance.
It's in abeyance. As if anybody knows what that means.
Well, you have to if you watch WWE product long enough, because they like this abeyance move. But I hate this, and it's emblematic of NXT not actually being the thing that made NXT this sort of cross appeal product inside of wrestling culture, which could bring in WWE style fans, but also bring in a larger wrestling oriented audience. Because it was delivering good matches. Good matches like, you know, not maybe, I was going to say Shinsuke Nakamura, probably not the best place to start, but like Kevin Owens versus The Revival and American Alpha, Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano versus American Alpha or versus The Revival. Like these are the sorts of matches that would get people who are involved in the industry and really passionate about the industry watching NXT TakeOver. And the NXT product that they're putting out right now suffers from all the same problems that Raw has, right down to the fact that now takeovers don't even feel like important things. What matters is the next NXT, which is really dumb when you've got a product like NXT.
Well, we're having a takeover in August on the 22nd.
Woot,
and
woot.
In order to get a new North American champion, we're going to have a series of three-way dances to get into the ladder match. Had our first one on this show. Bronson Reed picking up a win over Johnny Gargano and, how did I forget his name all of a sudden? Undisputed Era.
Oh, Roderick Strong.
Yeah. God.
I loved Roderick and Johnny's interaction backstage. Yeah. That was quite funny. Bronson Reed, I think, is a really good promo. Speaking of, you know, people who actually have the gift of gab, Bronson Reed's got it. He actually can talk. And I think that, I don't think he's going to win the North. He may win the North.
It seems like they're putting guys on that second tier who they haven't used yet into this match because they're these weird three ways where you're like, okay, if you had thought you're going to put somebody in a title picture, sure, you'd think that Roderick Strong or Johnny Gargano would be in there out of the three of those. But then next week as well, you have Dexter Lumis versus Finn Balor versus Timothy Thatcher. And I tell you, I don't think Finn Balor is the guy going forward.
No, I don't think so.
I think they're putting
either
Thatcher in there, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I think Thatcher's probably going to be the guy who ends up getting the title, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's weird when you could have just make Keith Lee dominant, but Keith Lee's now involved in...
At bare minimum, tell the story of Keith Lee, who wants to be limitless, wants to do something that no one has ever done before in NXT, and yes, he's won both titles, but no one's ever defended both titles, and he wants to at least climb the mountain of defending two titles on one night, because they have him fudge it and say he's never done anything like that before, even if he has. Have him do that. Like, that's an actual through line for the pay-per-view. It actually gives us something to build to instead of like this weird, okay, cool, that's neat. And I guess now we're just obviously building to Karrion Kross versus Keith Lee.
Yes, as Karrion Kross beats Dominik Dijakovic in pure 80s action movie style, staring at Keith Lee as he gets the win. I actually thought Dominik Dijakovic got too much in this match.
I agree
that they're gonna do this kind of thing to keep him strong. I mean, Karrion Kross should be a killer right now. He went through Tommaso Ciampa like a knife through butter. He went through Bronson Reed like a knife through butter. Let him go through Dominik Dijakovic. Say he was injured last week and just have him. I didn't understand this.
Okay, so here's the logic. I can make a case for it. It's not the way I would have went for it. But if you want to keep the power differential credible between Keith Lee and Karrion Kross going into that match, you can't have Kross being too powerful. And unlike Bronson Reed or Tommaso Ciampa, Keith Lee just recently had a match with Dominik Dijakovic. And so you need to make it. He won that match in relatively short order, but it was semi-competitive. And you need to at least make Karrion Kross appear to have a semi-competitive match with Dijakovic, because like theoretically that should be the through line that connects him and Keith Lee. And if he just cuts through Dijakovic like a knife through hot butter, then what does it say about Keith Lee? You're already kind of like pretty sure that he's gonna just crush Keith Lee. That could be an interesting story to tell. And again, this isn't the way I would go about it, but I at least get the rationale for it, and I can make the case.
We at least don't have Scarlett trying to lip sync anymore. So they've pivoted.
Yeah, but the entrance is still overkill. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing. Like when Dijakovic was coming out with the smoke, I almost thought he should have been And this would have probably nicely played into the match. He should have been taking the piss out of the entrance here by just, like, kicking away the smoke or, like, coughing or whatever. Like, he should have been ribbing Karrion Kross a little bit here. Because, it's such a campy cinematic entrance that, like, maybe it will work when he's the champion or would work it if he was paired with Mil Muertes on Lucha Underground. But, like, I mean, the smoke and stuff, it's just, it's a lot. Dude.
Are we getting a pivot on Robert Stone to become a more serious manager, or is this going to be played for laughs for 2 weeks before Mercedes kills him?
I think Mercedes kills him. I think she stays heel. She uses him to get what she needs to get this match, and then she just kills him.
She kills him, and then it continues to be Noof there going, oh, you'll be okay.
And what happened to Indy Hartwell? Like, you told this whole story with Indy Hartwell last week, and, like, no follow-up this week with Indy Hartwell, who seems to be the person who's joining the Robert Stone brand. It also would make more sense in the Robert Stone brand.
It's a shame, because I don't want Mercedes anywhere near a comedy character. I think you build her up as a killer. And you can build her up as a, you build her up to basically reestablish Rhea Ripley, in my opinion.
Yeah. Or, I mean, depending on what you want to do with Rhea, you reestablish, or you establish Mercedes as just, you know, like a, as a killer.
I want more killers in the division. My original.
I also think, like, Mercedes versus Io Shirai has some intrigue.
I'd team her with Shayna and go after the tag straps, to be honest, too. But that's my idea that will never happen now.
No, but I like that. No, I like that. But there's the way this company looks at people, I don't think that they'd ever be able to
do a cross-brand thing, get viewers to both shows. Just, yeah, why not? But, you know, she's going to be involved in tanks running over people's legs now, and...
Oh, my God, and Shotzi Blackheart, like, there is a good wrestler in there somewhere. I believe that she's, like, she does the kicks, and some of the stuff looks good. That senton looks like it really hurts, not because she's doing it so well, but because she gets, like, no vertical. It just, like, collapses on the person she lands on. I believe there's a good wrestler in there somewhere. But, like, everything she's doing is over the top even for wrestling. A entertainment structure that kind of trades in being over the top and bombastic. This is, like... all of that on overdrive, and her character is, like, so obnoxious and in your face. She's Poochie. She's Poochie from the Simpsons.
I want Mercedes to kill her, so she's a perfect.
Yeah, right. Right. No, exactly. No, like, when Mercedes is like, I'm going to kill Shotzi Blackheart, I'm like, please, please do.
Yeah, I'm a little nervous about that. And then Hawkins' semi-favorites ever rise, getting beat by... Breezango dresses Mounties. I kind of expected it, but...
I was told they were going to be a more serious team or some crap, that they're going to be funny on the way of the ring, but in between the ropes, it was going to be seriousness, and it's the same old Breezango, whimsy, whatever.
It's the ratings,
you have.
Chris. It's to keep that main roster feel.
And I think Ever Rise is good. I'm with you. I think Matt Martell, the big guy who kind of like has a little bit of a Mr. Perfect with black hair vibe about him. I'm into that guy. I like them as a team. I think, you know, there are certain tropes with French Canadians that I think we can maybe slow down on or lay off of, taking the liberté, égalité. I don't speak French, so liberty, fraternity, brotherhood, whatever, all that crap. They take it a little bit too far when they do French Canadian tropes. And then what was our main event here?
Oh, the main event was the Roderick Strong match.
Oh, Orny Loken and Timothy Thatcher.
How could I forget this?
Man, like, that's a forever feud, but, like, that's one, like, unlike other forever trains, I don't necessarily need to get off of it.
Oh, I want more scarring of the chest. I want a little bit of blood in this thing. I don't mind them fighting forever. I want to be more vicious.
Yeah, no, I'm into it. Like, and Thatcher is, here's what's fun about Thatcher, maybe a hypothetical Tim Thatcher title run, is that Thatcher has a very different style of match. But what's interesting is that, like, WWE has found a way to take his matches and force him to speed them up. Because his matches back in the day, like, and we saw one of them. Like, I remember seeing one live and just going, like, this is friggin' long. And, like,
counteract,
I get that, he's
that Timothy Thatcher promo with the Matt Riddle promo from tonight. And tell me who the killer is. You know?
Oh, God. No, well, that's the problem with being paired with King Corbin, too.
You dare come out here and to my kingdom and demand him. Oh, my God.
And Riddle, when Riddle treats it on any level of seriousness, he lowers himself.
Yeah, he's buying into the kingdom crap. I'm just like, no.
Right, exactly. When you entertain it and give it even ground, that's the problem there. You've already lowered yourself to their level.
Yeah, meanwhile, Thatcher, God, again, you pick me a guy who I think WWE would have no interest in elevating whatsoever. It's Tim Thatcher. Kind of a bland guy who does some grappling. But here, he goes in there, he shows, you know, a move and he breaks a dude's arm. Hell yeah. This is what I want of all my wrestlers. I want my wrestlers to be tough guys.
He's not even necessarily amazing at promos.
No.
And he's got a bit of a, you know, speech hindrance with the missing teeth. And you can hear it when he talks. But it's still, they are going with it, which I completely applaud them for. And two, they're leaning into the dude's strengths instead of accentuating his weaknesses. So he's not toothless Tim like he would be on SmackDown.
Oh, he's getting
with Shorty
he's
G.
Be toothless aggression part two on
yeah,
the main
toothless
roster.
Oh, God. Yeah. No, he's not getting the Shorty G treatment is my point here.
Shorty G and Timmy T. They fought it over wrestling. Oh, look at him skip down to the ring.
I know.
You can see
like
it,
it's
can't
just
you?
The corner
can't
now.
You see this as a tag team?
Yeah, absolutely.
They're just there to have fun, Chris. They're just
right,
there to
and
have
I
fun.
Don't want Tim to have fun. I like the fact. Here's what's made it really work with Tim. Tim has never wanted to just have fun. Tim has never had fun in his life.
I want a child vignette where he's in there, you know, crossing his arms. I don't want to play dodgeball. Yes, you know.
I would love like an old yearbook pulled out and like everyone's cheering at a sporting event. He's got his arms folded and just staring into the camera hatefully.
What else? Yes. Oh. Yes, I just want vignettes from his background. You know, I want his mother to say, you know, Timmy came out of the womb, and he was angry all the time. He put me in a headlock.
I've always hated cotton candy.
He tried to throw a birthday party for him, and he threw the cake away. You know, things like that. Just give me some. Yes, no fun, Tim Thatcher. That's what I want.
Pin the tail on the donkey's a stupid game.
It's not even realistic. He wanted a real donkey. It was very confusing.
He wanted to rip the tail off.
He wanted
off
to rip
of it.
A tail off a real donkey and put it on another donkey.
And then reattach it.
Oh. Anywho, we've had enough of nonsense, much like Aunt Pam. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at ChrisNovembrino. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. We are part of Voices of Wrestling. At Voices Wrestling, listen to the flagship. We have a mini sort of feud right now, Chris, with the Wednesday Night Wars show. Garrett Kidney just talking smack to us, and I'm.
Oh, what is that? That no good lout, Garrett Kidney, doing?
A grouchy Smurf over there who doesn't like
anything. Oh yeah, I've seen this guy's icon. Yeah, no, the only thing he likes is video games and stupid 28-second loops from Paper Mario and. Being
you
dumb.
Know, maybe I can't remember everything about TNA like he can. So he's sussing me online.
Oh, that's because you do better things with your memory than fill your head with that junk.
But, yeah, listen to Wednesday Night Wars. They're great. Music of the Mat. All our friends at Voices of Wrestling would appreciate more listenership. Chris also would appreciate some listenership on his other projects.
Yeah, go ahead and check out Don't Worry About the Government. You can get that at don'tworry.tv. We're also on Patreon as well. My other show, which is kind of like, it's like not in an abeyance, like on hiatus. The All in Family
Podcast.
Is it
decimating in abeyance?
Yeah, no, it's languishing. It's not decimated. It's not decimated. It's just, I don't have a good aiding word at the end of it. Ruminating is what it's doing right now. There you go. Yeah, it's you know, rumination can take a long time, as we know. So we'll be back eventually. Like, I'm not done doing it.
You continue to plug this dead podcast, Chris. Let's face facts.
Because you can get it. You can get it archivally. So that's always there. And then, unlike, you know, the news of the week stuff, if you just decide to watch All in the Family, which you should, because it's like good historical television. It's actually an entertaining show. You know, then you've got me to help watch along with it and give you some additional context on stuff. And my co-host Lindsay's great. And other than that, should I play the outro theme song here?
You can. I'll plug them downloading like an archival thing from three years ago Bailey debuting at, or 4 years ago. This week she debuted at Battleground. I think I gushed over that. Nevertheless, play our outro, please.
Gets better every week, baby.